Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we explore the relationship between food and style.
I knew from the start that I never wanted to, like, hot glue bread onto my body. Like, I wanted to be able to enjoy it after, and I did.
Food, which is so ephemeral, right? It's something that you eat and it disappears. With an image, it remains. It stays alive forever.
Food and fashion align in that they're both lenses through which to look at culture, right? And they're both also tangible things we can use to express ourselves and our identities.
Tune in to Meat in Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 150 countries around the world, about a million listens a month. And today, I hope they are all listening to Tech Bites, the weekly show where we look at the intersection of food and technology. And today we have, I repeat myself every week. I am so excited to talk to this guest. It is really a fantastic company. I say that all the time, but, you know, it's true. We do have a lot of great guests with a lot of really interesting food tech platforms. And this one is notable, not just because it is a digital online platform reaching lots of people around the world, similar to Heritage Radio, but it's for kids. And kids is something, the kids' point of view, tech for kids, food for kids, something we try and talk about every now and again on this show. But it's kind of hard to wrangle little kids to come on the show, even now, especially now that we are recording this remote via Zencastr, and I cannot entice people into the Heritage Radio Network studio with the promise of Roberta's pizza, which always seems to work. I have yet to meet anyone who says no to pizza. Today we are talking with Sarah Thomas, who is co-founder and chief imaginator of Kalamata's Kitchen. And Kalamata is a little girl, and she has a friend named Al Dente, who is an alligator. And the two of them essentially travel the world and have food adventures. And on the surface, you might think that this is a great way to teach your kids to cook, and it could be that. But Kalamata's Kitchen is actually something a little bit different. It's almost the same idea of what adults do when we watch things like Mind of a Chef, or we watch No Reservations, or Tony Bourdain, or any of our favorite personalities as they travel the world, Stanley Tucci. And we meet and explore and learn about people and cultures through food. And this is kind of the kids' version of that, which is actually perfect timing for the place the world is in today. So, Sarah, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. Pizza or no pizza, I'm very happy to be here.
Well, there are rumors of studio reopenings perhaps in the future at some point down the road, so we may be able to have a in-real-life event at some point in the future that involves pizza.
Well, that sounds delightful.
Fantastic. Yes. So you started Kalamata's Kitchen with your partner, Derek Wallace, with your business partner, not your life partner.
Yes.
And he's a dad. And you started this back in 2016 with the idea of bringing other cultures and peoples to a child's audience, a child's world, using food as that vehicle. And in 2016, that was a great idea. And you got audience and some interest and traction and started building. But taking us through, you know, 2020, when families were at home with their kids, they're looking online for things to do, and maybe also having some unexpected, challenging, difficult conversations about what's happening in the world and what's happening in the news in terms of culture issues and racism and things like that. It almost seems like Kalamata's Kitchen is really perfect for this moment in time.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. I mean, when we started this, this site, you know, when Derek had the idea, he was really thinking of a way to really get his son, Henry, to love the things that Derek loved. Derek is, and myself, this is why we became friends, we're great lovers of food and bars and real experiences around food and, you know, really experiencing culture and the world through food. And, you know, Derek said, there must be something out there that connects children from a child's perspective to all of the things that I love. And he looked around and most of the things that he found were about kids and cooking. And, you know, his idea was, what if we could create the character that connects kids through food not through cooking, but through trying, just by trying new things. And so, you know, he had this great concept and he always saw the big picture, like the real opportunity for it was just staring at him in the face from the second he came up with it. And soon after coming up with that idea, he called me. At the time I was working at Le Bernardin, I was a sommelier. My background was in literature, but I also loved working with children. And Derek knew all of this. And he sort of threaded the needle for me and said, do you think you could help bring this world to life? And as a child who had grown up really experiencing the world through food, my parents are South Indian immigrants. I grew up in rural Pennsylvania. There were lots of things that I experienced that were great and some not so great in that part of the world. Through my food and my culture, I thought, what an amazing opportunity to be able to share some of what had been so special in my own life, and also really an opportunity for exposure for kids who didn't necessarily have that. And so we started really building. And, you know, we always had this mission to do good, to put good energy into the world, to talk about the ways that that we could teach children that different is delicious, to take away the barriers of fear. And, you know, as you said, we started that way. We always had that mission to, you know, to create more curious, courageous, compassionate children through food. You know, we started with a Kickstarter in 2018. We self-published 3 books. That momentum, you know, as you mentioned, really built a really loyal, lovely fan base. We took that to a production deal with Imagine Entertainment and Penguin Random House in 2019. And, you know, we had all these plans in 2020 for in-person events and a 12-city tour. And, you know, we were just growing and growing and building, and pandemic happens. And, you know, as so many people did, we had to just reimagine, you know, we had to just say, okay, how do we take this momentum, this excitement, you know, all of the energy that we've been building, and how do we continue to create meaningful consumer experiences just in a different venue? How do we do it in people's homes? And so, you know, we really started out of necessity because we had been scheduled to speak at South by Southwest. We had a 15-minute time slot where we were going to talk about the ways food can create a more compassionate world. And, you know, we were going to intro Kalamata's Kitchen. We were going to talk about our mission. And immediately what we decided to do was, since we were scheduled for 15 minutes there, let's do 15 days of digital give backs. So we did a give 15 days of just, you know, straight donations to places like the Lee Initiative and to, at the time, the Restaurant Workers Relief Foundation. We did surprise and delight things where we were supporting our restaurant communities by just buying lots of food for when families would show up. They would just get stuff for free that we'd already purchased. We hired some, you know, recently out of work restaurant workers to document through art and photography and writing the ways that they were experiencing the pandemic. And we started to reimagine what events could look like in a digital world.
Well, that's quite a run from 2016 all the way up to 2020. Yes. But I'd love to go back and just unpack one of the initial ideas before we sort of roll into, you know, all of the different things now. Just, you know, with the premise of the idea of creating a platform for kids about trying things. I mean, historically, actually, in life, kids are notorious for not wanting to try anything. And is it based in actually they don't want to try anything, or is it based in that it's just a little bit of a power play where, you know, what they eat and what they don't want to eat is one of the small battlegrounds that kids can occasionally win? Did it seem like an easy thing to do to get kids to try stuff? I mean, that seems to be exactly the opposite of the way most kids and families function.
You know, we hear a lot about picky eaters. And, you know, there's a lot of people that want to talk about picky eaters. And one of the things that we posit is that there's lots of reasons why a kid might not want to try something. But if the reason that your kid doesn't want to try a particular thing is the fear of the unfamiliar, we think we can help with that. Because, you know, when you take something from a kid's perspective, which is what we're doing through this character, it makes it less didactic, right? It's not an adult saying you should do this. It's your friend Kalamata and her pal Al Dente saying, I'm so excited that I did this. And then the kid having the idea to do it on their own. And so really the crux of all of that is really changing the perspective, changing the presentation of how you're actually trying to entice your child to try something new. Is it you saying you should do this? Or is it from their perspective, this is a pretty good idea because your friend that you love did it too. And so that's really, I think that's the difference. It's a change in presentation. We're not promising to cure, you know, anything, but you could use this as a tool, this flippant perspective. And we used to see it, you know, when we could do our tasting events, we'd see it all the time where it would be parents who would come to our events which were very fun. We would give every child a VIP badge and a food adventure passport. And we'd set up in a food hall and we'd have all these vendors who were participating with us. And the kids would go around and they'd have their passports. And if they tried a bite, we asked them to try everything twice. If they tried everything on their passport, they get a stamp. If they finish their passports, they get a prize. The whole way through, there's all these like fun little illustrations and Kalamata and Al Dente are the ones kind of like encouraging them to do these things. And their parents are the ones who will say, yeah, no, you know, he only eats beige food and she doesn't do spicy. And, you know, all the list of things that they think their child will or won't eat is pretty long typically. And then we'll be like, oh, cool, which one's your kid? And, you know, turn around and it's a little boy is in the corner chugging beet juice or a little girl's going back for seconds of smoked trout dip or a spicy chorizo bite or something. And it's like, it's because we let the kid think it's their idea to do it. They're way more inclined to do it. And we've seen parents' jaws just drop. They're like, how did you do that? And how do we continue to do this at home?
Do parents have to have the same sort of openness and desire to travel and explore new things? And I mean, even if it's not actual physical travel, but the idea of trying new cultures and new things, do parents have to be willing to step out of their comfort zone as well, or just give kids the opportunity to do that?
I think the answer is yes. I think that parents definitely have to be open-minded about this. And I think grownups can really use a nudge every now and then to remind themselves to get out of their own preconceptions and to get out of their own habits. I mean, we've had a lifetime to build up our likes and dislikes. And every now and then, I think it's helpful to be reminded that, oh, maybe I should revisit that. Maybe I just had a bad experience. And if parents are willing to say, you know what, I want to try this with my kids, we think there's a real opportunity for bonding. How nice for the kid to see also that a parent is making themselves vulnerable and like participating in this adventure with them versus them just feeling like they're being forced into trying something because it's what their parents want. It's a really nice way for the whole family to do things together. And I have to say, after years of working in hospitality and service, it's a lot harder now and years now of working with Kalamata's Kitchen. It's way harder to convince an adult to try something new than it is to convince a kid. Truly.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm thinking right now about people that I know and friends that I have and being in restaurants with them who simply won't eat certain things or don't want to eat certain things and maybe won't even try a certain category of food just because it seems, you know, unappetizing or unappealing from one point of view or another. So it's an interesting idea. It's also a very, very heavy lift to be, you know, putting out the idea that through a really fun, cute, you know, little girl and her alligator friend, you can teach kids empathy and inclusiveness and community and things like that. I think it's a pretty audacious goal in some respects, just because those are challenging things to teach anyone just generally. Yes. At what point did you develop the Taste Bud Pledge? Tell us about that. It's such an interesting idea, the Taste Bud Pledge, to have kids agree to, you know, I believe it's a promise to keep their minds open, the fork ready, which is great, but then also to try new foods and then to share yes. what's on their plate when people don't have enough.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's a pretty, again, those are pretty grown-up ideas, I think, to a certain extent. And they're also, you know, not necessarily, you know, evident as to how you teach somebody those kinds of things.
That taste bud pledge we developed really early on, and it was really an exercise for us when we were trying to define our brand values and, you know, what we would want. Derek always put it as like, what are the things that, you know, we'd want our own children? What are the things that you'd want people to say about your own children? What do you want them, the kind of people that you want them to be? And we had a list of values, and we really, you know, we kind of tried to zero in on what we felt, you know, how Kalamata, the ones that would represent Kalamata and El Dente and their adventures in the world together. And we settled on curiosity, courage, and compassion. And, you know, as we were talking through it and talking about the ways that we could bring it to life, the pledge, we had a brilliant copywriter working for us at the time. And she was listening to all of our notes and listening to us talk about this and talk about the values. And it came very organically. Like, she wrote it and sent it to us. And she was like, do you think this is it? And we were like, this is brilliant. Because it does so perfectly encapsulate what Kalamata and El Dente are trying to do in the world. They are trying, and what we are trying to do through them, which is to encourage people, kids and their families, to be curious, to have to want, and one thing that came up a lot last year, particularly in terms of kind of racial reckoning and a lot of more conversations in this country about that, was you have to want to listen to the stories of people whose lives aren't like your own. And that was, and curiosity about the world is something that we would want. Everyone would say, I would love to be, I consider myself a curious person. I want my child to be a curious person. So that was really critical for us. The second part of that is that we try to empower kids to have the courage to actually explore that curiosity, explore those urges. So what will encourage a kid to say, I'm really curious about this and I want to take action on it. I want to try something new. I want to have this new experience. And then the compassion part was really key too, because we feel that in listening and empathizing itself is a compassionate thing, but empathy is actionable. And compassion is this, you know, this idea that to share what you've learned, to want to share what you've learned, and to also really celebrate what makes you, maybe your own culture, unique, want to share that with other people, want them to share with you. That's what we want to build into Kalamata's world, into her ethos, and what we want her to share with kids. And so that all came from just a really genuine desire to make sure our values were not only translatable to the grownups who would be helping us implement these things at home, but to kids to really feel that. And when kids take the pledge, you can see them. We ask them to take the pledge as one of the events the activities at our events. And you can really see them feel proud that they're doing this thing that makes them part of, you know, Kalamata's little club, and that they've accomplished something and they want to share it with other people because they're proud of themselves.
It's such an interesting idea.
Thank you.
So simple. And on the one hand, very simple, but on the other hand, just, you know, so sort of lofty goals of the best things that we wish for not just ourselves, but for our, you know, society and culture. Did you see a difference in how people, parents, kids, were engaging with the Kalamata's Kitchen platform from 2019 going into 2020? Was there a difference in people's reaction, how they interacted, the response, the desire, as we started going into the pandemic when everyone was at home, but then also going into last summer with all of the racial justice and discrimination and all of the protesting that was happening, and given the circumstances of the world, probably very, very visible to most kids.
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, what happened, as I said before, we always had the same mission from day one, and like people would hear it and they'd say, that's a great idea. We did have our kind of like small loyal fan base because of that. And then, you know, post, in 2020, really people, I think, started looking at it and going, this is a great idea and we need it. I think they started seeing the necessity, and I think people were, parents in particular were looking for ways to talk to their kids about race, about discrimination, about exposure, about, you know, and seeing the importance of things like diversifying their children's bookshelves and really like like wanting to find those resources. And we did our best to make ourselves a resource. We had, you know, anti-racist book lists for parents and for kids. We had activities for people to, prior to that, we had, you know, activities for people to do in the home. And I think what happened was that people really started looking more for companies and who were creating, you know, things that they could use as tools and resources to interact with their children at home. And then we did that through the activities. And then also, in addition to that, to talk to them about things that they may not have had to think about before, or didn't know how to talk about with their kids before. And we really just tried to be a resource. And so, yes, I think the fact that more people were looking for that did raise our platform. We'd been working on multiple partnerships at that time. And, for example, with our passports, which were kind of in-person things, we pivoted them to digital free activity downloads for people to do at home. And we did that with Chobani as a partner because they were also looking for a way to really change. They had an event heavy year planned as well. And we had been talking to them and they said, okay, well, this is a really unique perspective that we haven't done ourselves. Can we work with you on, you know, getting this out to as many kids as possible? Because kids and families need this right now. So as soon as they identified that need, that's when we started doing the free digital activities. And that's just one example of how I think, you know, it changed really from a nice idea to a need very, very quickly for a lot of people.
The Chobani, notably, actually the Chobani activity was one of the ones I was going to mention because there's a future food founder like yes. activity kit, which is absolutely adorable about how it sort of walks you through the business, you know, products, signature items, make your pitch, all of that, you know, for kids. And that's so great because that's, you know, we deal with so many food founders here on this show. It's fun to think about a kid imagining a project and a product to put into the world.
Oh, it was so fun. And kids, they come up with just amazing things.
Yeah. And probably, you know, I mean, you could probably put some of them onto a real pitch show.
Totally.
You know, because I mean, you see kids on, you know, Shark Tank and most of the time they're pretty good and often better than the, adults, actually.
It's true. Well, there's so much less fear, right? Of like, it's incredible because, again, those are just examples of when like people let kids act on their own ideas and like say, this is your idea, go do it. It's successful there. We see it all the time. And it's really not so different from what we're saying through food is like, let the kid, you know, let it be their idea to go on this food adventure and see what happens. Because a lot of times they're more open to trying things when you frame it as that kind of adventure and it's on you to take it than they are if they're told something.
I think everybody's like that. Everybody likes to think it was their idea.
Totally.
My idea was to create Tech Bites back in 2015.
What a great idea.
Yeah, on Heritage Radio Network is fantastic. And it's a fantastic platform, and the show is supported by the platform, our listeners, our members, and lots of underwriters also, like this one, who is sponsoring the show. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008, and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
You are listening to Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we talk to influencers and innovators in the food tech space. And today we are talking with Sarah Thomas, co-founder and chief imaginator of Kalamata's Kitchen. If you want to take a look at the platform, take a look at all the great content, blog posts, downloadable activities for kids, information about their upcoming book, swag you can buy, you want to check out kalamataskitchen.com. That's K-A-L-A-M-A-T-A-S, kitchen, Kalamata like the olive. You can follow them on social media at Kalamata's Kitchen. They are getting ready to publish a book later in July. I believe it's their fourth book. And it is following the adventures of this like really adorable curly-haired girl with her alligator friend Al Dente. And you're putting a book out into real life, which is great, sort of moving off the digital, getting something into people's hands that's tactile. Is the book something that was on your roadmap anyway? Is the book something new that came up over the course of last year when people really realized a greater sense of urgency about the importance about teaching kids about different cultures and people?
Actually, the book was how we knew that we would make kids fall in love with the character. You know, kids learn through stories, kids learn through narrative. And so when we started with storybooks. We knew that this was going to be the best way to really sweep kids off into this imaginative land of exploration and culture and adventure through food. And again, it was about, you know, making sure that the lessons and the stories were being told from a child perspective. And when you look out in the food world, the only characters that you often, you know, especially when we started, that you'd see were characters that were on like cereal boxes, and what are they teaching you? And so, yeah, we started with the book knowing that we always imagined it being a show and, you know, products and, you know, everything else you can imagine. So the first three we did, we self-published, and this book that's coming out on July 20th, which you can pre-order now on our website, is with Penguin Random House, and it's the first in a series. We're basically relaunching the series. It is a new story, but we're relaunching. This is going to be book one in the new series of Kalamata's Kitchen.
So you were already on track to do a lot of these things, having started in 2016. Did the year 2020 change any of your plans? Did it accelerate your timeline because suddenly so many more people were really voraciously looking for this kind of information for their kids, for their family to share? Did it just accelerate things? Did you add anything new or readjust in any way given the state of the world?
Yeah, it did accelerate things a little bit. I mean, we already had our deals in place in 2019 for, you know, our partnership with Imagine Entertainment to develop an animated series and our multi-book deal with Penguin Random House. But yes, our timelines did get moved up. I think people said, well, we need this now. And how do we make it, you know, how do we get it to market as soon as possible? So that was great. And as far as, you know, new things, we had a really big sort of, you know, experience ecosystem centered around Kalamata that we had a lot of ideas that we always wanted to do. We had time to really build out how we were going to do them. And so, for example, like changing the framework of our events, you know, replatforming our Taste Bud Travel Guide, which is a whole digital platform, really kind of trying to redefine family-friendly dining for people who want unique food experiences with their kids, don't want to end up in a Denny's every time they, you know, have to think about eating with their kids out. And so, you know, yes to acceleration. And as far as new, I mean, we're always open to collaborating and working with new people. And so because of the, I think, new attention and, you know, the fact that people really wanted Kalamata and Al Dente in their lives, we were able to do a lot more, you know, kind of partnerships with chefs, for example, telling a lot of stories, you know, working with a lot of restaurants to figure out how we can help them reopen, you know, and take their message to a family-friendly audience. So yes, things like that were new and are very exciting and are still ongoing.
Well, in New York City is very urban, and we're used to seeing kids in a lot of places that maybe you wouldn't see them in other parts of the country or other parts of the world. We see kids all the time in museums and at the theater and in restaurants. you know, at night and things like that, fancy restaurants sometimes, you know, even really, really, you know, high-end three-star Michelin places, you see kids sometimes. And maybe we're just used to that, but the idea of, you know, the Taste Bud Travel Guide, what is your definition of family-friendly restaurant?
Well, we just think that you have to provide a unique food experience. So you have to have, like, you know, great food, great experience, great atmosphere.
But that's and not also, exclusive to family, though, is it? I mean, right, I'm kind of looking for great food, unique food experience, great service.
Yes, and the second part of that. Yes, the second part of that is that they have to treat the children as the VIPs as well. So you go in and are the, you know, as the host, as the server, or is, are they going to talk to your child the same way that they talk to you? Are they going to be as welcoming? You can see sometimes when you walk in with a child, there are places where they're not happy to see you. And, but then there are so many more places that I think parents would assume that the restaurant's not going to be happy to see them show up with a child. And the fact is restaurants, there are many restaurants who provide these incredible, unique food experiences that have that perception. And the chef and the owner is saying, no, we would love to see more families here. We would bring our family here. We would eat at this restaurant that a lot of people would assume that they can't take their kids to with our kids. So that's what we're trying to create with the Taste Bud Travel Guide, is a list of curated family-friendly destinations where the kid and the adult are getting those unique food experiences. And the kid is not being treated as an add-on. We want these experiences to be shared experiences.
And so it sounds like it's restaurants self-identifying as, yes, we are family friendly.
Yeah, we have, I have been lucky enough to meet a lot of extraordinary people in the food industry in my 10 years in the industry. And so we have a lot of personal connections that we've really only built from that. And there are people who then reach out to us and say, you know, how do we become a part of this? We love what you're doing. We love when kids come in. And there's places that you would not, you know, we're talking to chefs and they're saying, we want them to come here, which is the extraordinary part of it. Because again, I think a lot of parents would assume that there are certain, like James Beard award-winning restaurants, that they would see that and they'd go, oh, that seems like nice. Maybe we'll plan that for a date night for ourselves and do that by all means. But if you want to go there with your kids, we're giving you a list of places where they say, yeah, bring them here.
Well, certainly over the course of 2020 with the pandemic and the idea of not socializing beyond what you defined as your pod or your, you know, immediate intimate group of people, many of those pods were families. And then once people were starting to venture back out into the world, you know, people going to dinner, you know, I think there were many more families with children out in restaurants all the time over the course of last year than there might have been in the past, simply because of, you know, sort of the change in what's expected and what's available and how we, you know, go out and interact in the world. Did you see a difference in terms of how restaurants think about having families come in? Did you have people say, you know what, we're not going to do this, or we're interested in doing this? Has there been a change, or is it essentially the same people who were embracing and wanting, you know, family diners, is the same group then as it is now?
I think the attitude of the restaurants was always pretty unchanged in terms of, like, just being, creating welcoming experiences for families. That's something that's just hospitality for a lot of these people. It's just built into who they are. We were just helping them reach an audience who may not have known that. And so in terms of change, I mean, I think the bigger change was a lot of places that didn't formerly do or have, like, robust takeaway programs or takeout programs. You know, the way they pivot to do, say, family style meals versus plated things and, you know, things like that, I saw change. But I think the central core of hospitality in terms of restaurants welcoming families was the same. The people who were excited about it before were still excited about it. And were, in fact, excited about, you know, coming up with, you know, sort of unique ways that they could do it. And so I think that kind of take home part of it was the biggest challenge and change, I think, for a lot of our partners.
I think probably still an ongoing change as we, you know, move into the future. I don't know that anybody really knows what the future exactly looks like when it comes to restaurants and going out and eating and traveling and all those kinds of things. But at Kalamata's Kitchen, what is your game plan look like between now and the end of the year and the next the next year. Are you planning on continuing to build a really robust digital platform? Do you think that there's going to be a continued need for things that are virtual? Are you going to be transitioning back into mostly in real life events and activities? Is virtual here to stay, or do you think it's going to pedal down and real life pedals back up to where it was before?
You know, it's interesting. I think what we have figured out about ourselves is that we're a very adaptive group. And so we'll continue to be assessing, you know, the demand for digital events, digital experiences. The Tastebud Travel Guide is a huge part of our brand, and we are only going to be ramping up on that. I think the activity will always continue to provide, you know, meaningful activities for people to do at home with their families we'll always be coming up with new ways that will be accessible through our website. So in terms of building, kind of on our existing digital platforms, the answer is definitely yes. We're going to continue to build and grow that. In terms of events, we love our in-person events. We just love them. We don't know exactly when we can start doing them to the scale that we were doing them before. But in the meantime, you know, as we transition back into that, we're going to continue, you know, a lot of the book tour is going to be virtual, for example. And while, you know, what one of the main components of our in-person events is trying new foods, and in a digital world that prevents, you know, that's slightly more complicated to do, there are still ways that we're trying to make these digital book readings and things more, you know, still really special and really unique, whether it's like little gifts and surprises, or, you know, we have something called the I Tried It Dance. And, you know, when we do Zoom readings, I'm going to try and get the kids to do an I Tried It Dance with me. We have a little Zoom dance party. There's things we can do, but we certainly are very excited to get back to doing our in-person events as well.
It'll be interesting to see when all those things start to happen and come back to life. Definitely, you know, we've done a few shows over the course of this year on virtual events, both featuring some virtual events. We did an episode with Bollywood Kitchen, which is an interactive dinner theater event that happens live from someone's apartment in New York City. And it's a great story. Story of a first generation Indian man who grew up in Pennsylvania, and about the food that he loved and grew up eating, and sort of translating that out to the rest of the world. And it comes, you know, you can get a package of ingredients and cook along with it, or, you know, cook ahead, or, you know, all those types of things. And it's really interesting. I do think that the creativity that has come with creating some of these virtual events and the digital events, platforms, media, is something really extraordinary. Even, you know, in spite of, you know, all the tragedy surrounding the pandemic, there is a perhaps silver lining or flip side, which is this just tremendous creativity. And I do think that people, you know, it resonates with a lot of people. And there's also just the convenience factor of being able to experience something like dinner theater in your home and not have to spend an hour on the front end or an hour on the back end going, getting there, navigating traffic, parking, you know, all those types of things. So I think even just from the convenience factor, and, you know, that's exponentially so with people who have kids, who are hustling kids into the transportation to get them to where they're going, and all those types of things, that probably hybrid experiences would be my guess as to where we're going for the future.
Yeah. I think, you know, just to say, I'm so inspired by in a very difficult year, in a very difficult time, very challenging for so many people for many different reasons, the innovation and creativity that came out of it, as you said, was just incredible to watch. And I think it's really like supercharged a lot of people to like continue to innovate in a space that like is really massively helpful and can be, you know, we're using digital platforms in a way to reach audiences that like you can't do necessarily if you're doing all in-person events, which of course we love to do, but it's really, you know, it's offered us an opportunity to reach so many more kids. I'm going to be able to do a book reading and an event in Seattle the same day I'm doing one in Portland, Maine because of this. And that's really extraordinary. And our goal is to get Kalamata and El Dente and the Tastebud Pledge into as many homes as possible. And this is just, it's really allowed us this opportunity to innovate, to be creative, and to change.
Is Kalamata going to be traveling internationally at all this year? Are you primarily people logging on in the US, or is there an international audience? Are you going to translate into different languages? Do you have plans to get her a passport and have her start traveling?
Yeah, I mean, that's all. There's the sky's the limit in terms of...
especially in the digital world. I mean, that has been one of the big things that everyone has said over and over, from local restaurants to, you know, global brands to, you know, theater and other arts, that the digital platform really allows for such an expansive audience and an opportunity to reach so many more people beyond what you would get, you know, in a local event at your local spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, this next story that's coming out July 20th is about, it's really one of my own childhood memories. Kalamata is experiencing her mother cooking South Indian dal in her kitchen, and she's transported by these smells. And so I think this story will, you know, resonate for a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. But I know for a fact, because I've already had a little bit of coverage in India and, like, particularly in my parents' home state of Kerala, that people are really excited to see books like this that represent, you know, stories that are very familiar to them and they haven't seen represented for kids before. And so, yes, I think there's, and that's just, you know, just for the story, but I think, you know, the reach that Kalamata can go anywhere, and she plans to go everywhere. And so I think a lot of people will have personal, you know, very joyful reactions to it when they see themselves represented and their own stories and their experience represented. And I just think it's going to open the doors for so many other people to also experience that as well.
Well, it's really charming, and it'll be great to see how it evolves. And again, I mean, it's really perfect timing to be presenting these ideas to kids in a way that is really easy, you know, food-related, but it's not really about the food. It's about using food as the vehicle into these other things. And, I mean, lots of adults probably need it, too. I mean,
yes.
You know, it wouldn't be, is Kalamata going to have, like, an older sibling or cousin, perhaps, that might be talking to the adults and having them perhaps make a taste bud pledge as well?
I mean, I think grown-ups should just listen to Kalamata and Al Dente and take the taste bud pledge. I think this is a shared experience, and they could use it.
Yeah. Well, it's really wonderful. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it evolves. My guess is that you probably just need to keep up with everything as it evolves, just because so much is happening right now, and probably the demand and the activities and things like that, the accelerated pace of what's happening because of the pandemic and the different issues that, you know, are front and center and very present now. I would guess that just kind of keeping pace is probably one of the biggest challenges.
Yeah, but you know, it's very, very exciting. And in a strange way, it reminds me of being, like, very in the weeds in service in a three Michelin star restaurant when you can't, like, show any fear. And, like, you have 25 million things to do and, like, 30 seconds to accomplish it. And you go, okay, here's how I'm going to do it. Like, I loved that rush of, like, figuring that out, like, making that little roadmap for myself, like, moment to moment on the restaurant floor. And in a strange way, like, you know, it's not as quite as chaotic, I would say, but it's exciting. It's still, like, I'm learning something new every day. There's stuff I just, you know, never knew that I'd have to learn about. And here we are learning about packaging and, you know, all kinds of things about marketing. And, but it's so exciting. And I know I speak for my whole team when I say it's the best work any of us have ever done. And we're so excited to do it every day, and we don't want to stop doing it. And I thank you for saying that you're excited to see, you know, where we go. Me too. Me too.
Well, it's also, it's one of those things where it is so simple. It's almost surprising that it's not out there more, or that more businesses or companies or things aren't coming at it with a similar point of view. You know, I mean, it's a very original character and articulation of it, and it's a lot of fun and it's creative. But the idea of just, like, sharing with people who don't have and trying things, I mean, those are kind of universal. And it would be great to see more people, companies, platforms, you know, talking about those things.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, I want to thank Sarah Thomas, co-creator and chief imaginator of Kalamata's Kitchen, for calling in and joining me today. If you want to find Kalamata out in the world, head to kalamataskitchen.com or find them on social media at Kalamata's Kitchen. Keep eyes out for that book coming out in July, along with, who knows, maybe at some point the world opens back up and there will be a live in-person event for, you know, people to go and try things. I want to thank Matt Patterson, the engineer of TechBytes. I want to thank DJ Uptown Nico, the person who created and gave us our theme song, Nomada CPU Track. Heritage Radio Network, the amazing platform that we broadcast on, Simplecast, and all the other pieces of fancy technology, along with Zencastr, that allow us to record remotely and turn this into a podcast and bring it out into the world. I want to thank our sponsor for the episode, our members who help us keep the lights on and the mics hot. And I want to thank you, our listeners, because if we didn't have listeners, we didn't have people thinking about the stories that we share, spreading them around, passing them along to people, really, it would just be, we'd just be sitting in our apartments talking to each other.
Thank you so much.
If you like the show, come back and see us next week. If you really love it, go to your favorite podcasting platform, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, subscribe, leave us an amazing 5-star review. If you really can't live without it and you think these are important conversations to have and save for now and the future, go to heritageradionetwork.org, click the beating heart, and make a donation. Maybe give us what you spent on your last book. It'll help us keep the lights on and make more radio. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, and this is Tech Bytes.
Tech Bytes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Just enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.